Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Woodruff, pediatric neurologist and medical expert witness. On this show, we talk about the intersection of medicine and law and how physicians can responsibly contribute to the legal system as expert witnesses. Today, I'm joined again by Dr. Amy Fogelman, a primary care physician and the founder of High Rock Experts. High Rock Experts is a physician-led consulting firm that connects attorneys with qualified medical expert witnesses across hundreds of specialties. Through her work, Dr. Fogelman has helped match hundreds of clinicians with attorneys nationwide and has trained physicians on how to become credible, ethical expert witnesses. She also created High Rock Academy, which teaches physicians how to navigate expert witness work and build a medical legal consulting practice. Amy, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I hope people have listened to the last time that we were able to meet up. We talked a lot about the business side. We probably could have gone on for a couple more hours, but I think we hit on a lot of the most important high points. And today we're going to talk about the clinical pitfalls. If people want to know more about Amy, please make sure you listen to the last podcast where she introduced herself and provided a lot of her past history of how she became an expert. The clinical side of things, that's supposed to be easy for us, right? but I think a lot of people make some mistakes.
Yes. Yes. So I think the most common mistake that we make is that we assume that our clinical expertise alone is enough to serve as an expert, and it's just not. Because expert work requires legal understanding, and that includes these concepts that are just nebulous, and we don't learn these in our medical training, like standard of care, causation. In civil cases, we talk about this more likely than not standard, or a 51% standard, that is so different than the way we are used to thinking of things in medicine with p-values that are, you know, a totally different kind of standard. And so that is, if you don't nail down these things, you can veer off very quickly into the wrong direction in expert work. And I've definitely seen this. And so there was a case that I reviewed for the defense. And I was reading the report from the plaintiff side, and she had great clinical credentials. But when I was reading the report, she was writing it based on like what the guidelines show that you're supposed to do, but that's not what people actually do more likely than not in actuality. And so it was just, it was sounding more like, you know, recommendations at M&M rounds rather than understanding what her assignment was, which was a standard of care conversation, which is, what would somebody do more likely than not in the defendant's shoes in a similar or same circumstance as the defendant? You know, and so it's the way I kind of think about it is like medicine allows variation. So two competent physicians may actually manage a case differently and both still meet the standard of care. So like, for example, if like an ER patient with abdominal pain, if their exam is reassuring and their labs are normal and their symptoms improve, one doctor might discharge that patient with return precautions. And the next day, the patient develops appendicitis. The allegation may be, well, the CT should have been ordered. And many doctors reviewing this might say, I would have ordered the CT. But the legal question isn't that. It's, you know, was conservative management reasonable at the moment? And You know, just because a bad outcome occurred doesn't mean that there was negligence. So
I think that's, yeah. And one of the things that I have found is some of these legal standards change by state. So, and so I have recommended, if you're going to do standard of care, and we talked about it on a previous show, there's sort of like three big chunks of how we give opinions. There's sort of liability, standard of care, there's causation, and there's damages. So the first, if you're giving standard of care liability testimony, I think it's important to ask the physician, whether it's the defense or the plaintiff, whatever the side attorney. You're on. I mean, the attorney, sorry. Ask the attorney that state's specific, because I've heard in other states, it's a slightly different definition where it's, what would a similar physician do? What would a similar, under, let me, how did, it was like, what would be reasonable for a similar physician to do under similar circumstances? You know what I mean? And so,
yeah.
And even the 51%, there's some nuances with the words, like more likely than not, reasonable degree of medical certainty, more probable than not. And those things can be, and if you don't have that wording correct, that can really throw things off. So we all need a little law school boot camp.
I think, you know, getting training helps, but don't be shy. I love what you're talking about, Brian, to ask the attorney for help. That's what they know is the legal concept. And every word is important to that. Like, we may think, well, that means the same thing. Well, it doesn't mean the same thing in law. So ask the attorney to explain that to you. They might just assume that you understand it, just like we might assume somebody knows what an upper endoscopy means. But it's but they need to really explain that to you. And especially, I think sometimes the newer experts get shy about asking questions because they think that somehow that makes them seem like they don't know what they're doing. But ask.
No, it's actually, attorneys actually appreciate that. And one of the questions I have, you have a lot of courses on your High Rock Academy. This particular, where, is there a course that you have that listeners could, can purchase, that is sort of like a, law school, you know, like a boot camp?
I would say the flagship course that I have, which is the basics for becoming a medical expert, that contains everything that you want to know about the legal, all of these legal nuances that we go into in a lot of detail. So that would be the course. And I don't have a lot of courses. It's really only two courses. It's that, and then there's a deposition course on there. So those are the two courses. There's some other offerings that have, like, parts of the basics course I've taken out, but those are the two offerings.
Okay. I knew there were several there when I was looking at your website.
I have just marketing, if you want to just do the marketing piece, if you're really an experienced expert and you don't want to review the courtroom boot camp because you feel like it's too, you know, basic, you can do just the marketing.
I know that Dr. Lundell has a course that you work with him on, I think.
Yes.
There. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. And I know he's got a new book out. I'm hoping to get in touch with him and have him as a guest in the future.
He would be a great guest. Yeah. He teaches the deposition course and he's really great. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll look forward to inviting him and hopefully he accepts.
I'm sure he will.
So we talked about a lot of the legalese that we really need to be open to asking questions. We need to acknowledge that we are not attorneys and know where our lane is, right? We got to know where our lane is, both legally, we know nothing, and clinically, we need to know where our lane is, right?
Yeah. And that actually is I think something that I see as a problem as well are these lane violations where you, especially when you're first starting out, an attorney might say, hey, Amy, can you review this inpatient case? You know, it's a pneumonia case. Can you look at this? And I might think, I want this case so bad. You know, I took care of, you know, inpatient pneumonia in residency. I know about that. And when you look at the, you know, the federal rule of evidence, which is 702, you're technically allowed to opine on it, right? Because you need to have had knowledge, skill, experience, training, or education. So you meet the requirements, but practically you're going to be made fun of as soon as you get deposed when the attorney turns to you and says, Dr. Fogelman, when was the last time that you took care of a patient inside the hospital? And I have to, you know, think back to when did I complete residency? And, you know, that's not going to go well for you. It's just going to make you look foolish.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. Don't take cases when you're not busy and hungry, for cases that are not something that that you are going to be able to be all in. I think this sort of brings up a side thing. Never trust an attorney that says, I need you to review this. You'll never be deposed in this case. You won't go to trial in this case. I just need your opinion in a report. That's just a side thing. Like that has come up, and that is almost never true. Yeah.
That's such a good point. As soon as you're putting it in writing, your name is attached to it. You can do a background opinion. If you're doing a review and you say, hey, you know, I think this might be something, but obviously, you know, you need an inpatient doctor, but this is my opinion on that. You're allowed to say that, but that's not something that you're going to be putting in your report if it's not something that you have recent substantive experience. It just never ends well for the expert when you go out on a limb to, you know, try to help out an attorney. It's not,
you're going to get helpful. Eaten alive. And depositions are hard enough to begin with. You don't need to make a fatal flaw up front.
Good point.
You're going to be uncomfortable at a deposition, because that's their job, to try to make you feel uncomfortable. You don't need to help them.
And, you know, credibility is your currency of expert work. So you don't want to impede on your, in your, besmirch your credibility. So you always want to do a good job in that.
Well, what else is on the clinical pitfalls?
You know, I think this is, again, like another beginner mistake. But actually, no, I've seen this in some experienced experts, too. So I take that back. But this advocacy versus educator mindset, I don't know if you have seen this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know that you and I feel the same way about this, that experts, our job is to educate the judge and the jury. Our job is to explain the medicine clearly and objectively. And experts do not win or lose cases. And so when things start to go wrong is when experts start to sound like advocates. And they ignore inconvenient facts. They stretch conclusions. They use inflammatory language. Jurors are going to notice that immediately. And it's going to hurt your credibility. And like one time, I've seen this as well. I one time reached out to this expert. He looked great on paper. And he sent me an email. I wanted to recommend him to an attorney for a case. And he said, every time I testify, I win at trial. And I was like, I can't recommend him to the attorney. Just immediately was like, took him off my list. He doesn't understand what the role is. So I don't know. Have you seen this as well?
Oh, I haven't seen, because, you know, I don't talk to a lot of, but just in cases, I read a lot of depositions, right?
Right.
If, you know, I've been deposed in 200, 250 cases. And so you get a lot of depositions to read. And it's very easy to read and see where somebody's being an advocate, where, you know, there are about four or five different answers. And I tell this to people of how you answer questions. It's like, I say, it's yes, no, I don't know, I don't understand the question, green. And people say green. It's like, if you can answer it yes, answer it yes. If you answer it no, answer it no. If you can, if you don't understand the question, let somebody know. If you don't know the answer, and if somebody asks you what color is grass, you just say green. You don't say, well, you know, Bermuda grass in the summertime in Florida kind of gets brown by July. No. And one of the things that builds credibility and is concede where you have to concede. Right. Answer, you know, everything isn't a trick question. Everything is not a trick question. Some things are just softballs, even if they're coming from the opposite side. And, if somebody says, you know, isn't it more likely than not, if you fall out of a third story window, that you're probably going to get hurt? You know, you're going to say, yeah, yep, you're going to get hurt somehow, some way. You know, and it's not a trick question. You're not like, well, you know, maybe there was something on the ground that could have. No. And so I think, even though I like to talk, one of my things that I have to actively do at a deposition is try to be more concise, precise, and answer the question that was asked. Nothing more. That's one of my biggest challenges.
But to listen to it and to answer it, like you said, the falling out of the three-story building and not just try to think of how do I get out of it as if it's adversarial all the time.
And you don't have to analyze every question and wonder why they're asking it. That's not your job. That's the attorney's job. Mm-hmm. Your job, just answer the questions truthfully. And if you're prepared, we talked, Jeff Willis at one of the previous episodes, talked about preparation, and we've talked a lot about preparation in these, because that's really the key. And we could probably have another discussion about preparing for a deposition. But if you're prepared, you're ready to answer those questions. That's, you know, this is your time. Deposition is an oral final exam. That's what I tell people. It's an oral final exam with a professor that wants you to fail. unlike a regular, that's what I always tell people. Yep, you're sitting. Yeah, an oral final exam. You need to know all. It's open book though. It's open right. book. So yeah, we kind of hit on, you know, if we've got a couple extra minutes, I have no answers to this next question, but I people keep asking me, and I don't know where it goes, but where is AI going to take this whole expert witness world at this point? It seems like it's out there. I don't think it's really hit the expert world, the legal consultant world, but it's coming. It's everywhere. I don't see where it's going to fall as it relates to this work. What are your thoughts?
That's a great question, Brian. And I'm not an expert on this. I can recommend some people though to talk about that.
Definitely.
But I would. There are some case management tools out there. I get inquiries all the time. I'm sure you do too, from people that want to test their new AI tool to review the medical records for a case, for example. I would caution your listeners from using those at this moment, because depending upon the case and the jurisdiction, you're just opening up some privacy concerns that haven't really been teased out yet. There was just a case, and I'll send this to you because I don't remember the details. It was in the Mass Lawyers Weekly this week, but where I guess a defendant put some of his legal, like parts of his story, into ChatGPT. And so the argument was, is the lawyer attorney to client privilege, did he get rid of that because he used ChatGPT? And let me just find it for you. I want to get this right. This is the headline. AI induced. So basically, it was a white collar criminal defendant who waived the attorney client privilege because of using documents with AI. So be really, really careful, people.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
But let's like go into a spaceship, and let's say we're able to travel into the future for a time when all of these, you know, you have people sign a agreement that says it's okay and all the privacy issues are resolved.
HIPAA, PIH or PHI, and
right,
you know, all of that right. stuff is all protected. It's enclosed, it's encapsulated, nothing's getting out.
Correct. So when that happens, it's going to change how we look at this. Like, wouldn't it be great to be able to look at records and have it be organized right away? You always have to make sure that what it says is truly what it says. Again, be careful, because at this point, you know, AI is hallucinating some things, but let's say there's a time when it's not, that would be a great time saver. And then potentially experts could spend their time just working on their opinion. That may mean less money for experts ultimately, because they're going to be spending less time reviewing records. But I would imagine that we're talking years ahead. The legal world is so backwards. I just can't imagine that they're going to allow a computer to give an opinion rather than a person. I think there's just all of these regulations are so clear about who an expert is. They're going to change the federal rule of evidence and say, oh, like AI can do it now. I don't see that happening.
I think you brought up two points. The first point is, I don't know what is slower to adopt, medicine or law. And, you know, there could be a debate.
Education is the third.
but it is coming. And I don't think experts are ever going to be eliminated. Experts have been around since, you know, the English law prior to even the, you know, but I think it's my, if I was sort of looking ahead, I think it's going to create timelines that people can have an easier time organizing, but they can verify. There's going to be the ability to go and verify primary source. And it's going to possibly be able to pick up on gaps in records, like, oh, you're missing, you know, this was a hospitalization of, you know, 7 weeks, and you're missing 3 days out of this. Creating, consolidating some data, like if you want to know all of the liver enzymes that happened in a 7 week hospitalization, pulling that all together. But once again, somebody has to verify every single one of those primary verification. So I think it may be analogous to when we had electronic health records, in that it's sort of consolidating, bringing information together. It didn't eliminate physicians. It didn't eliminate caretakers. I guess we could debate if it made life easier. That would be a different show. But it certainly brought information, and I don't know how I would live without an electronic health record now. So it's coming. I think there's I would look forward to maybe offline. You can send me some idea of some people that you think would be good to come on the show. So,
Absolutely.
well, I think we should wrap up. This has been a second show that has been it's just been awesome talking with you. And I think we'll be back again at some point in the future. We'll have It seems like we just started our conversation, and we have a lot more topics that we could cover, but I really appreciate it. For those of you out there that enjoyed the show, please subscribe and like. We'll be back in the near future with Expert Witness Playbook. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.